From Odyssey, I'm Lauren Berry, and this is the On Deadline podcast, where you get a closer look at stories from our radio newsrooms across the nation. Today, On Deadline is taking a step back from our heated political landscape and asking maybe the most important question of the year. Have the red and blue divisions in the United States created a real threat of politically motivated violence? Former President Donald Trump was the victim of what the FBI has deemed an assassination attempt Saturday. That's when a 20-year-old nursing home worker opened fire at a campaign rally from a nearby rooftop. Why did he do it? No one seems to know, at least not as we record this. I knew immediately that something was wrong and that I heard a whizzing sound, shots, and immediately felt the bullet ripping through the skin. Much bleeding took place. Trump shared that in a post to Truth Social just hours after the shots rang out at his rally in Butler, Pennsylvania. His ear was clipped by the shot that many experts agree could have killed him. That's if he hadn't turned his head very slightly as the bullet rang out. The shooter has been identified by the FBI as Thomas Matthew Crooks, and he was killed by law enforcement after hitting Trump. In addition to injuring the former president, he critically injured two bystanders and killed another. Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro identified the fatally shot man as 50-year-old Corey Comparatore. As footage of the violence aired over and over, the world stood still. President Joe Biden said this the day after the shooting. Politics must never be a literal battlefield, God forbid a killing field. And both Trump and Biden took the opportunity to ask for something rare these days, unity among Americans. But how did we get here in the first place? Eric Nisbet, professor of policy analysis and communication at Northwestern University, joined Odyssey to share more on what's driving political violence in the U.S.
You're a professor of policy analysis and communication at Northwestern. About the acceptability of political violence?
Right. We've been doing surveys for a few years now. We're even doing surveys this summer. And, you know, one of our major surveys we did shortly after the midterm elections in 2022. And we found that about a quarter of Americans, and it was pretty much equally split between Republicans and Democrats, believe that threatening or intimidating messages towards, you know, political leaders of the other side was justified, at least in some cases. And we also found about 15% of Democrats and Republicans believed violence was okay to advance a political goal. So, you know, there is a sizable number of Americans, if you like blow that up to the general population, millions, who believe that violence, at least in some cases, political violence, is justified or okay.
But when it comes to the demonization of the other side, and I've been years and years saying, you know, the Democrats are not the enemy, the Republicans are not the enemy. They're people that live down the street from you. They're people you go to work with that have a different vision of how the country should be run or could be run, and they're fully entitled to that right, and they should have a voice in it, even if your side wins. That's what compromise is all about. But somehow it seems as though, if it ever existed, that type of reason has gone away. Did it ever exist in this country, what I just said?
Well, you know, we've had episodes of political violence historically in the United States. You know, political violence is not new. But there is something new, though, happening in the last, say, 10 years. And what's new is that political violence would be based upon, you know, diffuse political ideology or like single issue. There'd be violence, you know, like eco-terrorism on the left or other types of terrorism on the right. But what we've seen in recent years is political violence based upon our partisan identities, based upon being a Democrat or Republican. And that's what's the scary part, is when our formal politics devolves from the ballot box to violence or you know, sending threatening. It can be a variety of violence. It can be injuring, killing, destroying property, harassing, threatening political leaders. And that's what we've seen as a shift that's very concerning to a lot of people.
So is that part of this? Is it that we somehow are dehumanizing the other side? And I'll follow up with one thing that that really stood out to me was President Biden referring to former President Trump as Donald. And it would seem to me a first step towards civility would be recognizing the other person as a human being and calling them by their name. Thoughts?
Right. Dehumanization, dehumanizing rhetoric is a big part of it. right? And that rhetoric comes from our political elites and leaders on both sides. It comes from our partisan press. I believe they play a big role, even more so probably than social media, in terms of shaping how we view the other side as immoral, less than human. And if we view the other side that way, then violence becomes morally justified. All right. It's called moral disengagement, right? That we don't think of ourselves as a bad people if we engage in violence against them because they're immoral. And this is like, for example, this is the basis of the QAnon conspiracy theory, where the idea that Democrats are somehow satanic or, you know, child pedophiles, right? Then violence is okay in that regard. And the other key part of this is just how our political identities for some people have become sectarian, right? That basically these mega identities that even supersede our American identity, and where politics becomes this struggle, this existential threat between our two groups, right? And the third part of this is this idea of what we call meta perception. If you believe the other side is violent, you are more likely to engage in violence to protect your group, all right? It's very group-based, this group identity. So if they pull a knife, we pull a gun. And so a lot of researchers show that Democrats that think Republicans are more likely to engage in violence are more likely to engage in violence themselves and vice versa. So this is sort of the milieu that, unfortunately, the tragedy that happened on Saturday occurred.
Now party leaders, politicians, pundits, and even presidents are looking to lower the temperature of our fiery political discourse. We should all be relieved that former President Trump wasn't seriously hurt, and use this moment to recommit ourselves to civility and respect in our politics. Former President Barack Obama said that after the shooting. He added that there's absolutely no place for political violence in our democracy. Former Presidents Bill Clinton and George Bush also spoke out against what they called a cowardly attack. Political analyst Steve Roberts joined Odyssey to share more on these efforts to turn down the volume on the angry political rhetoric.
You know, from a historical perspective, Steve, you would remember the Reagan assassination attempt in 81. What happened in the aftermath there?
Well, there's no doubt that this significantly helped Ronald Reagan. Polls all showed that. But there is a significant difference. Ronald Reagan was a widely beloved figure. He had won a huge electoral victory in 1980. And so there was a widespread national sympathy for Reagan, this genial and widely popular figure. Donald Trump is a much angrier, much more divisive figure. So I think the parallels are limited. I don't think the country is going to unify around Donald Trump the way they unified around Ronald Reagan, because they're very different figures. Donald Trump's whole political persona has been to divide, has been red hats against the rest of us, MAGA nation against the world, us against them. He's never tried to unify the country. And so tonight and during the Republican convention, when he talks about unity, that does not fit the Ronald Reagan. He can't be Ronald Reagan, and he can't be other than Donald Trump. His whole political career has been to divide. And that's where the result of this incident is going to benefit him. It's reinforcing his argument. See, I told you they're out to get me. They're out to get you. That's not a message of national unity. Message of national unity from Donald Trump is not believable, but a message of anger, a message of retribution, a message of division, a message of loyalty. That's all part of the core Donald Trump message.
You know, there are calls for unity from both sides. What do you think happens with the level of rhetoric now? Does it get better or worse?
It's going to get better for a while. People are going to be sensitive to it, maybe through the end of the summer. But by the fall, all of the ads all are going to revert, I think. This shooting is not going to change the basic battle lines in America and the basic mood and even culture of America, Susan, where this is the 16th presidential election I've covered. And I've never seen an election where both sides not only think the other side is wrong, they think they're evil. And the rhetoric has been so escalated where if you elect the other guy, we're doomed, right? Both sides have said that. That is a whole level of anger, a whole level of resentment, a whole level of demonology that goes beyond saying vote for us because we're better than the other guy. It's vote for us because the other guy is evil. The other guy is going to lead us into damnation. So, frankly, maybe for a while people will feel a certain amount of caution, but I expect that to dissipate by the fall. I think we're going to be back to the same rhetoric.
Donald Trump pumped his fist into the crowd, blood running down his face. It's an image that's already become iconic. And it has many people asking this question. Is his re-election as president basically a done deal after this assassination attempt? This new and different attention on Trump has also, at least momentarily, dialed down questions about Joe Biden dropping out of the race after his much-criticized performance at the first presidential debate. KCBS political analyst Mark Sandalow shared more on what to expect from the rest of the race.
Is there a sympathy vote following the assassination, or is this just politics as usual?
Sympathy or maybe even respect for the defiance. You know, I was a kid growing up in Michigan when George Wallace was shot in the D.C. area, and the next day was the Michigan primary. And, you know, George Wallace at that point was an avowed segregationist. He was, you know, segregation today, segregation tomorrow, segregation forever. He was shot and paralyzed. The next day, Michigan voted. And George Wallace won the primary, which I remember being a big embarrassment from people from Michigan that they could vote for this guy. Now, Wallace, so clearly such a thing as a sympathy vote, you know, exists out there. But what you hear a lot of is defiance as well, that, you know, people who thought that Donald Trump was somehow weak in resolve are now saying, look at that photo, man, that guy is tough. Now, there's another possibility. I mean, George Wallace, to go back to that analogy, after he was shot, his politics changed dramatically. This is a guy who, as I said, was an avowed segregationist, and he ended up, you know, winning re-election in Georgia with the overwhelming majority of African-American votes. He had more African-American staffers. He apologized for some of his previous views. It is at least conceivable that Donald Trump looks at the bullet that came within an inch of ending his life and changes the way that he approaches things, sort of a come-to-Jesus moment of some sort. And any combination of those things are possible.
So the campaign narrative just changed on a dime, given the news this weekend. Does this put Republican leaders in a better place to campaign?
I think there's no doubt that they, the question is how much. I mean, the election's not for a couple months, but the idea that it makes it much harder for Democrats to go with a no-holds-barred attack on Donald Trump. I mean, Joe Biden, for the first time, talked just about 72 hours ago, well before the shooting, about how this is a man who a judge said raped a woman. This is somebody who a jury agreed sexually assaulted a woman. And, you know, there's some very rough things in Donald Trump's background. It now begins to be very difficult to say those things, you know, 48 hours after the man was shot at. I don't think that lasts for long. And partly it depends on what Donald Trump does. If Donald Trump does what his, what right now the lead, the betting market could say the top choice as vice president could be J.D. Vance, a senator from Ohio. J.D. Vance, even before they identified the shooter, talked about how this was clearly a, you know, a Biden doing, and this is what happens when the left talks up against Trump. If Donald Trump takes that approach and starts to come out and say, this is what you get, I took a bullet for you, and they're coming after you next, then I think you'll see Democrats fight full bore. But right now, I mean, you know, everything Donald Trump touches is unprecedented. And, you know, I hear these people on TV right now pontificating about what this looks like. I think what's fair to say is that nobody has a clue as to how things are going to unfold this week, let alone over the next couple months.
After the attempted assassination of a former president, how should we move forward? It's not our job to tell you what to think, but it's clear that no matter our priorities or our political viewpoints, where we live or how we spend our weekends, We have to agree on some things in a civilized society. And one of those things should probably be following the law. Newell Normand, an Odyssey host based in New Orleans, also pointed out something worth remembering. The Secret Service agents who threw their bodies in Trump's way, we don't know who they voted for. We only know that they were willing to die to protect the rule of law that democracies like ours rely on. So, as more information is released about how Crooks was able to get within shooting distance of a former president of the United States while carrying an AR-15, let's also remember those men and women who were willing to risk it all to stop him. We can disagree on politics and let the powers that be decide who is at fault for the security failure that Donald Trump was lucky to survive. And then we can vote for who we think will be best at running the country. And at the same time, we should all remember that we're better off reaching for reason instead of rage. This show is produced by Joe Heady, Christy Strouser, and by me. I'm Lauren Berry, and I want to say thanks for listening to On Deadline, Odyssey's serving of a top news story just for you. Subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcast to stay informed.